Tyler Wendell Murphy versus Commonwealth, Ms. Smith and Mr. Katz. Both of you waited patiently as we got through the docket this morning. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Kim Smith.
How much time would you?
Sorry, 5 minutes, Judge.
Five or above? Thank you.
Sorry. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Tyler Murphy, and there's one assignment of error, that is that the court erred in finding the evidence insufficient on his claim of self-defense. Jackson versus Commonwealth, certainly this state says that if you reasonably fear bodily harm, you're allowed to exercise reasonable force to repel that assault. That is honed down by McGee. We say that it's not essential that the danger should in fact exist. It has to, but if it exists in the mind of the appellant in this case, he has a right to defend. Certainly, Virginia has said that we can't exercise this right and just willy-nilly go about it. You can't endanger harm. You can't do great bodily injury except in great or extreme circumstances. And then that the amount of force has to be reasonable. And certainly that was the question that came down for this court. We have a situation where appellant observes Deal and her boyfriend on the strip in Virginia Beach, and the initial what draws their attention is an argument between them.
I think the government will actually concede that the initial confrontation, for lack of a better term to use, was accomplished by the victim in this case. The victim was out of control, apparently had too much to drink, was acting inappropriately in a public place. I think the government will agree with you there. So I think what comes down to deciding this case, though, is what occurred in the offensive action. And it wasn't just I'm defending myself and I'm just doing enough to kind of get away from the situation. Once your client carries the day by knocking the guy out, he proceeds to gloat and do additional things which are, what some would argue, not necessary to accomplish a self-defense objective.
I understand, Your Honor. Certainly the argument at trial was that what happened at that point had to be viewed through the lens of everything that had brought him up to that point. So the court agreed that was a mutual combat situation. The initial fray, we know that, it's Mallory that closes most of the distance that they get in a fight, and that it's my client who withdraws. He says that he sees the blood on his mouth, says this is enough, and he proceeds to leave with his brother. And then it is the evidence of the two bystanders who have no part in this at all, who observe that the girlfriend, Deal, comes across her boyfriend and starts landing blows to the side of my client's head. So we've got a situation where my client tries to act reasonably, he's removed himself from the situation, he is trying to retreat, and they have reignited the fray. His testimony was that, again, he's reeling from the blows that she's landed, and the next thing he sees is, of course, the victim coming towards him. So it's on again, for lack of better terms. And again, we know that he hits him one time and he's on the ground. Now, people keep throwing him on the board unconscious. Again, that was a medical term of art. I'm not sure who knew what. Certainly he was on the ground, and I think that if there was some great span of time between him hitting the ground, my client maybe walking around and pausing and, just staring at him and then coming and landing these kicks, I think we've got a very different case.
But a component of self-defense is necessity.
Correct.
In other words, you need to do that which you need to do to defend yourself. And once again, I'm using the term, you carry the day in defending yourself, your actions after you carry the day become very important to decide whether or not your actions are reasonable under the circumstances. And if from an evidentiary standpoint it is determined that those actions were not necessary, you lose the benefit of the complete self-defense analysis. And again, I think when the fact finder points to the fact that the defendant stood over him, said, "I knocked your boyfriend out, now what do you want?" and kicked the man as he was down, using the term literally, that was what was decided to be not necessary in the self-defense.
My impression of that statement was that it was after the kicks that my client made those statements to Deal. So again, you've got split seconds, you've got him hitting the ground, you've got the kicks that are landed to his chest, upper torso area, and then the statement to her. And again, I go back to McGee and that, you know, was in his mind, was he still in reasonable danger? Was he still, you know, and he testified to that. He testified that he was in fear, that again, he left. And then he's being attacked by both of them.
But the trier of fact rejected that, rejected the defendant's statement that he was in fear. And you have the reality of whether this person was unconscious or not, he was on the ground. And he kicked the guy on the ground instead of retreating. That's the gist.
And again, he had tried to retreat. So again, I think that that's where we're disputing what the trial court concluded. The error of it, that again, his testimony was in fact that he was in fear. And I think that's, again, reasonable. If he's trying to leave, they've attacked him again. He doesn't know how far this is going to go. He knows that they're drunk, they're belligerent, they're fighting amongst themselves. There's already been one altercation. He's tried to leave that, and here both of them are attacking him again. He wants this to end. He wants to no longer be under attack. And I think, again, the decisions that he made were split-second decisions that I think could be found reasonable on the plan.
You have plenty of time for rebuttal. Mr. Katz.
Good morning. May it please the Court. If this court, I'm Benjamin Katz, appearing on behalf of the Commonwealth. I would urge the court to affirm the conviction for unlawful wounding in this case.
You would agree that your victim is not entirely victimless here.
I would, and I believe Your Honor correctly put your finger on the issue before the court today. I think the trial court was clear in finding mutual fault in the events that led up to it. The salient event for this court's analysis is the stomping. After the blow that knocks out Mr. Mallory and he is on the ground, at that point, is the defendant in reasonable fear of bodily harm such that he can exercise the excusable fault of self-defense? And the trial court's findings are clear. This is at 200 to about 204 of the joint appendix, that Mr. Mallory never gets up, that he poses no threat, that there are credible witnesses, Scouten and May, who say he is unconscious at that point. And opposing counsel talks about the sequence of the statement, the taunts to Ms. Deal, and that's at page 95. May's testimony is clear that those taunts are delivered after the punch, after the knockout blow, and before the stomping. So the reasonable inference that flows from the evidence is at the time of the stomping, the defendant is well aware that Mr. Mallory is knocked out, that he poses no threat, and then he proceeds to deliver multiple kicks to the head.
And Ms. Katz, I'm not suggesting that you're a man of violence, but you're a guy. And I'm sure that there have been situations where you have been in a physical altercation in your time.
I'm an officer of the court. I could not deny that.
Okay, and I would suggest to you that during those times when you're in those physical altercations, if you're a guy like most guys, and I'm confident that you are, having known you for several years, that when you're in a fight, you're not really thinking about, you know, these legal principles of excusable self-defense. You're in the fray, and you want to make sure that if you're winning, you're going to get it over. That's a typical, natural, instinctive reaction when you're in a fight.
Well, and certainly that would be the defendant's argument, where they assert on brief that they were in an adrenaline-frenzied state of mind. And I would submit, while it is a legal nicety, if one persists in using force when it is unreasonable, one does not get the benefit of excusable fault as a self-defense argument. And so, yes, it is necessary to slice that onion thinly and to make split-second decisions in the affray. But here, it wasn't even a close consideration. I mean, had Mr. Mallory gotten up again, perhaps that would be reasonable.
Do you think if we had just had the words without the kicking, we'd have the same case?
No, I think it would be very different. I think up until the knockout blow, clearly the defendant is on solid ground for excusable fault. It is the repeated blows to the head through the foot, the stomping and the kicking, that make it unreasonable.
Well, counsel, does it really matter that he was knocked out? I mean, the guy's on the ground. You're kicking a guy on the ground.
Certainly. Only in that it makes it a better case for the Commonwealth. He presented no threat. That's the finding of the trial court. But the fact that you have credible evidence in the record that suggests he was unconscious makes it more so. But absolutely. Clearly, there was no threat posed by that gentleman at that time. And so that any reliance on the fact that he could have been a further threat is unreasonable under those facts.
You would refer to, and I'm going to ask your opponent colleague this question, in court's statement at the appendix pages 18 to 29, the continual infliction of bodily harm to a helpless or unconscious victim in and of itself would be malice, and then coupled with the other circumstances demonstrates the totality of circumstances from which malice could be, is not required to be, but could be inferred. Would that be the basis of your argument?
Yes, Your Honor. And here we have the court finding that the heat of passion negated the malice, but it certainly didn't do away with the intent. With that, I would ask the court to affirm. I'm happy to answer any additional questions the court may have.
Thank you, Mr. Katz.
Thank you.
Your shot to take a shot at the trial court.
Just very briefly, I'm just reiterating that, again, I think that the totality of the circumstance, again, affirms the reasonableness of Mr. Murphy's actions, that, again, had there been some prolonged time between him hitting the ground and then the kicks being landed, I think that's a very, very different situation. But, again, it was the heat of passion. It was the adrenaline rush. It was everything that had brought him up to that moment, the wanting the fray to be over. That's why he acted, and I'm, again, asserting that his actions were reasonable. In that situation, that's the reverse of Charles' decision.
Thank you, counsel. We'll come down.